Welcome to The Rachel Peterson Show, the place where we dissect social media strategies entrepreneurs are using to build their brand, go viral, and make a massive impact. Let's dive on in.
Welcome to the Rachel Peterson Show. This week, guys, I am a little more than pumped because this week's interview is with the one and only Ulises Osuna. And let me tell you, we have a lot of fun. We geek out a little bit, we talk about who makes me fangirl, and we share some good laughs. So I'm excited for you to enjoy this interview and be a fly on the wall in a very, very fun conversation. Without further ado, Ulises. I'm so excited to have you on my podcast because I've been following some of your work and what you do on social media, and it looks like you're kind of everywhere. And so I guess I want to hear from you a little bit about your background and how you got to where you are today.
Yeah, so I first got started in online marketing about 2 years ago, and it was... Oh, I remember. So I was on YouTube, and then, you know, an ad came up. I don't remember exactly who the guy was, but he was basically selling me the dream, you know, the lifestyle. He's like, if you follow my proven step-by-step formula, you'll become a multimillionaire and stuff like that. And at the time, when I was 17 years old, you know, that enticed me. So I didn't have enough money to buy the product, but, like, the real change that happened is that lifestyle is possible. So even though he sold me the dream, which, you know, in a way I kind of don't like that, he inspired me to do something more with myself. And then that's how I got started, and I started researching online marketing. And if you research online marketing, chances are you're going to find Neil Patel. You know, that guy's like a legend in the online space. So I became a major fanboy of Neil Patel. And I would email him all the time. And now it came to the point where, like, I can text him or call him. But... I saw Neil Patel and he was everywhere. So I was like, one day I want to be like that guy, you know, maybe not in the online marketing space, but, you know, in my space.
I think that is so cool. And full disclosure moment, I have definitely fangirled over Neil Patel. And so I've responded to his emails and he responds back. And that's when I have like a geek out moment. Neil, if you are ever listening to this episode, I don't even care. I'm not cool. You are so cool. And then like one time I texted him and I was like, hey, and I had like some dumb idea. It wasn't even valid. But I was just like, I'm texting Neil Patel. This is so cool.
Right?
Oh, why can't we just be
chill?
Yeah,
I know. That's amazing. I'm probably gonna send him this episode.
Please do. And yes, Neil, I'm totally a loser and I'm fine with that. So. But I love his work. Okay, so you got started in online marketing. You were sold on the dream, and it is kind of interesting because there's a fine balance with online marketing between the dream and the reality of the steps it takes to make a dream come true. The dream is absolutely possible. I've discovered that for myself. But that doesn't necessarily mean someone can sell you the dream and instantly you're a millionaire and, you know, driving a Lambo. But what was your first real step into online marketing? Where did you start?
So my first legit online marketing gig is I worked for Jack Vale, and he's like an actor and he has like over 1 million subscribers on YouTube. And I was just helping him out with his website. He had bought in the ForrestGump.com domain.
Oh my God.
So I use that as like major leverage because he allowed me to create the website. So now I could say, you know, oh, I created the official website for Forrest Gump. So that was like my first official gig. But I didn't really get paid salary. It was like per result or per project.
Yes.
But that kind of gave me like the leverage to get more jobs. And I don't remember. Oh, okay. Yeah, I do remember how I got that job. So he had posted something on Facebook and then everybody was commenting. Like he posted something that he needed help. And everybody was commenting, you know, their expertise and all that. And I commented as well, and I showed my website. And at the time, I was really good at website design because if you want to learn online marketing, you kind of have to have a website.
Right.
So that was like the very first thing I started doing. So I showed him my website, and he's like, yeah, contact me. And then I was like, yes, you know, my first gig. And after that, it just kind of snowballed.
Well, and to say it snowballed is a light way of putting it, because you were only 17, almost 18 at that point, which is important to note. So really the cool thing about online marketing, about social media, it's an even playing field for people who are, you know, I've seen 13, 14-year-olds who are in online marketing, as well as 65-plus-year-old. Right. It's so cool that anybody can really get started in it as long as they're willing to do the work.
And you know what? Like, you're so true. You're so right. And actually, like in my situation, I found that my age is an asset in most cases.
Yes.
Because there's more leniency. There's more like that wow factor. Because if I was like 35, you know, chances are like the stuff that I'm doing right now wouldn't be as cool.
Yes. So. Well, so for anyone who's 35 and listening to this, don't worry. You can still do really, really cool stuff. Yep. But I have definitely found that as well. And it's funny because sometimes I compare myself to other people and I'm like, oh my gosh, I wish I was at X, Y, and Z point. And then I remind myself, I'm 27. I have 3 years till I'm 30. You know, this is, I have a whole lifetime.
Yep.
Yes. So you've been doing some really big things. After getting involved with online marketing, you became a writer and a contributor for many established online platforms. Is that correct?
Yes.
So tell me about that. That's so cool.
Yeah, I was pretty ecstatic about that too. So my major goal in 2016, so kind of like my new year's resolution, was to make a lot of money and to get on major publications.
Yes.
So, you know, I went like 6 to 7 months without doing anything. There was no growth, no income, nothing. Like, I was a nobody. And then instantly, once I got into one publication, I leveraged it to get into the other one and then to the other one. And then, like, you know, it was almost like everything came to me at that point. And then I started gaining authority. People wanted me to write for their site. Like, once I got into Entrepreneur, Brian D. Evans, the founder of Influensive, he commented and he's like, yeah, I'd love to have you on Influensive and stuff like that. I don't really remember how I got into the publications. Like, the best way to get into any publication is to have an intro, you know, to have an in. And I kind of call that like the underground world of PR because the people that don't really know, they'll go on like the general submission forms. But that's like, you know, that's the perfect way to get lost in the crowd. So, yeah, you have to have an in, or you don't have to, but it's best if you have an in, especially if you're not like Bill Gates or Mark Cuban. The publications aren't going to automatically go to you for you to write for their publication. You know, so, if you're not somebody that has like, you know, a big following, or you're not really huge in the online marketing space, it's I recommend an intro, because that's probably the best way to get into a publication as a contributor.
Yes. And one of the things that you also talked about, and this is something that I share with my students and my communities quite a bit, you talked about kind of like, this is what I call it, is stacking your wins. And the way you said it is, I leveraged what I had going for me, and you leveraged that in order to secure more success.
Yeah. So what do you call it again? Because I call it something different, but it's like the same thing.
Yeah. I call it stacking wins.
Gotcha. Yeah. I call it the snowball effect.
Yes. And it's so true.
Yeah. Because once, like, getting your first few features or getting in as a contributor, the first ones are always the hardest. Yes. Once you already have that, like, first few features, it's easier to get into the other ones, because once the media publications see that other publications are picking you up, then they're more likely to take on your story or to take you on as a contributor, because you have that experience, or you have that, you know, that credibility that you didn't have before.
Absolutely. Did you ever have anyone who questioned you based on your age throughout this entire process, or did that never even come up once?
Yes, it did. So I applied to become a Forbes coach counsel. So I wanted to become a contributor, and basically you pay to become a contributor there. And the bad part, well, it was good, right? They accepted the first response. Like, you go through the application and there's like two or three back and forth that you have to do. So they accepted the first one. And then when they kind of took a look at who I am and stuff like that, they told me that wait a few years and then I can go back and, you know, apply again. So I think that they kind of limited me based on my age and not on my expertise. Yes. So yeah.
Oh, that's so crazy. But I'm actually really glad that only came up once. if that makes sense. You know, it could have
right,
come
yeah,
up.
Right, me too.
But I'm excited to see what you're going to achieve even just over the next 1 to 2 years. So one of the things that's also really cool about you, and I want to make sure I'm saying your name right. It's Ulysses, right?
Yes.
Okay, Ulysses. Yes. I am the worst with pronouncing names, so I wanted to make sure.
Oh, that's you're great. Because like I went to McDonald's once, and I told them my name, and they put down useless.
Oh!
I was like, what the heck? I let it fly, but I was like, wow.
Oh, I can't even imagine how Starbucks would butcher your name, too. You know, they're known for it. So one of the things that I think is really cool, too, is that you've been very, very active on social media. And most of my user – or whoa. Thank God for editors. So you've been really, really active on social media. And most of my listeners are very active on social media. They're social media managers, or they're using social media strategy to build their businesses from the ground up. And I think that that was something, at least from – you know, a third-party perspective, that you really leveraged from the get-go. How did that really start for you?
So I kind of just tested out, like, what people like to engage with. And one, you know, it's kind of cliche, but provide value. And the other is just post your wins. You know, a lot of people, they like following somebody, or they like, you know, being there for somebody else when they have a win. So I've noticed that. And when I post my losses, they don't really go as well. You know, they don't get that many losses. They don't get that much engagement. Or if they do, they're like, you know, suck it up or something like that. So I found that being authentic, being who you are, but posting your wins, you know, whether it's a small win or a big win, people like to see that. I like to see it as well. You know, I engage with that too.
Yes, absolutely. I think that what you said just now is really, really vital for anyone listening. You know, nobody wants to be associated with somebody who is always talking about their losses or their fails, unless, of course, there's a lesson to be learned in the process.
Right.
But people are excited when they see their friends or even just their Facebook friends having wins and having success. I definitely have found that in this online marketing world and just in, you know, the world of entrepreneurs, people are rooting for each other. Have you found that experience to be true?
Yeah, definitely. I found that we're more collaborative than competitive. Or we're all competitive, but it's like collaboration over competition. And I love that.
Yes.
Like me and Andrew O'Brien, we're competitors. But at the same time, like I look up to him as my mentor because, you know, he's great at what he does. And I'm not going to like sit back and be like, oh, you know, he sucks, blah, blah, choose me. If somebody tells me, oh, how's Andrew O'Brien? I'd be like, yeah, man, go for his service. He's amazing at what he does. So, yeah, I prefer collaboration over competition any day.
You know, and there's also one thing that's interesting about the competition side of things. Have you ever taken Strength Finders?
I have not.
So Strength Finders is this, it's like a personality test that basically gives you your top 5 strengths, and it helps you to figure out which strengths you should be working with and leading from. And one of my top 5 strengths is competition. And what it explains about competition is it's actually a self-competition. You're competing with yourself. You have a high level of expectation for yourself rather than competing with everybody else. So that's one way to...
That.
Isn't that kind of cool? It's a different way to think about it. So, okay, so what are you working on right now? I want to hear a little bit about how your career has morphed over these 2 years.
So once I became a contributor to these publications, you know, I found out that it's like a very unsaturated market and a lot of people want to become like the authority in their space. So I created Influencer Press. And at Influencer Press, we mainly work with like influencers who have thousands or millions of followers. And we get them on these major publications like Forbes, Inc., Entrepreneur, you know, all those big ones. And that's right now that's what I'm focusing on. Like I don't want to... My goal for 2017 is 100K months. Like that is kind of the only thing that I really want to hit because I know if I have too many goals, I'm going to get distracted. So I've been saying no a lot more. And actually, I've said no to like a lot of podcasts, but for some reason, I really loved your intro. So I was like, man, you know, it'd be amazing to get on this one. And then also I saw, you know, you were interviewing some other power players and I'm like, this would be really cool. So, that's my main goal. I just want to hit $1 million.
I think it's absolutely doable. And okay, so I want to actually back up because for most people, and I think for most of my audience, the idea of actually hitting $1 million feels absolutely untouchable. And I know, at least from where I'm coming from, the way I grew up, even six figures is like unheard of. You know, you hit six figures, you are made. Life is good.
Yep.
You can quit. No, it's seven figures just isn't something that is a reality for a lot of people, but it definitely is something that is possible. Tell me a little bit about your upbringing. Were you raised to be an entrepreneur?
No, I was not. And actually, my parents weren't really in agreement when I wanted to kind of do entrepreneurship, because they saw that I was in my room like 24/7. I would miss eating meals. I didn't hang out with friends. They thought I was becoming like really antisocial, you know, which is true. But like, they were just worried for me. So they kind of didn't like it. And they would have me do busy work, which, you know, it's meant to teach you values and stuff like that. But I didn't like busy work. I wanted productive work.
Yes.
So, yeah, they weren't really in agreement with it. And also, like, they made me go to college for 1 year. And then I just dropped out after that. I failed every class except business. I dropped out, and then, you know, and I told them, give me a year. You know, give me a year to really start making money. And if I can't do it, then I'll go back to college. Mm. And then, so they said, you know, all right, cool. So I think within the first 3 or 4 months, then I started really making money, good, decent money. And then I was like, yes, finally, you know, I'm not going to have to go back. And making $1 million in my situation, or 100K a month in my situation, isn't that difficult as it seems, because when I first got started, you know, I wanted to dip my hands into like everything that I can get into. I wanted to do this, do that. But the goal is to focus, you know, like, what is the money making activity in my business? And the money making activity is finding people that will pay for my service. So I really only need to get 10 people at 10K a month on a retainer, you know, on a contract, to hit that 100K mark. And that isn't too bad compared to, like, I've been able to get, I think, like 6 to 5 clients in a month before. But it wasn't at that price point.
Right.
But I'm barely starting to get people at that price point. So now I just have to kind of scale that. And that's it. Because I was going to do like a launch, you know, because I went to a workshop and I can't even talk. I was going to do a launch and do all this other type of stuff, but you don't need to, you know, at least I don't need to. And that's not what makes money in my business. So, I mean, it surely can, but I want to focus on what I can do now and what I know how to do, and just kind of scale that up as quickly as possible to hit my goal.
Absolutely. And I think a key of it is, like you said, to really cut out anything that doesn't get you closer to that goal for 2017. So I'm excited to see as that really unfolds for you.
Yeah, thank you.
Definitely. So you've touched a little bit on what it is that you're doing right now at this phase in your career, but I want to hear a little bit more about what it looks like. What are you doing on a day-to-day basis? What are kind of some of the highlights with your brand?
Oh, that's a really good question. So I have this... you know, like, a mentor of mine told me to put down time studies. So I have a timer. I turn it off, but I have a timer on my phone for every 30 minutes, or it's more of an alarm, for every 30 minutes. And during those 30 minutes, you know, I track down what I do. So, like, once it hits the 30-minute mark, I pretty much write down everything that I did that past half hour. And what that allows me to do, it allows me to see where I'm wasting time, where I can hire, and where I need to put my, you know, my resources at. So, like, it's a good way to see what am I wasting time on and how can I, you know, eliminate that. So that's what I do to make me kind of productive. But on a day-to-day basis, I work with my clients in figuring out what angle they want to hit for what publication. Mm-hmm. So we used to do, like, add-to-cart type features where they get to choose what publication they want to get on. And then that's, you know, that's where we focus our time. But now we kind of just, it's like we take every chance that we can get. And by doing that, we get them more exposure and more press.
I think that's really cool. So by opening it up to quite a few more publications, you feel like it's a little bit easier to kind of snowball or stack the wins, as we like to say. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Because then we're not spending like a week or two to get them on one publication. When we get them on one publication the first week, and then that's another publication the second week. And then, you know, that way it snowballs into the one they actually want to get on.
That is so smart. Well, I don't want to pick your brain, because I hate when people say, can I please just pick your brain for a second? But let's say somebody were to consider hiring you to work on their PR and on their publicity in 2017. Do you have like a set of steps that somebody could take before working with you that would make everything so much easier? Like, is there something that they can be doing on social media to prep themselves and put themselves in a good position for working with you and maximizing kind of those wins being stacked?
Yep. Yeah. That's a really good question too. So if you're, you know, before you start getting press, you should have kind of like what you're going to use the press for. You're either going to use it as leverage or, you know, to bring an ROI. And keep in mind, like, getting press won't bring an immediate ROI unless you use it as leverage. But as far as like traffic and stuff like that, you won't receive like an immediate ROI. But before you start getting press, you should pre-frame your social media and kind of like do all the work beforehand. So when people look at you and they try to, you know, oh, is this somebody I want to take on? They don't have any second doubts. So that's why, like, the verification that I have on my profile has helped me immensely. Because if I message somebody on Facebook, you know, like, it kind of gives me that automatic credibility where I don't need to kind of establish myself or mention any wins or anything like that, because they see that I'm verified.
Yes.
You know, so that helps out when I'm pitching out to when I'm pitching out my clients. You kind of need to do the same thing for your social media. So, for example, if you go on mine, yeah, I don't really go on much people, so I'm going to give mine as an example. Like, my cover photo is something about my business. My bio is like a short 1 to 2 sentences of like what I do and kind of establishing, you know, that that authority right away. And then I put my featured photos as some of my work that I've done. And then everything on my timeline is only something that has a lot of likes and only something that's a major win. So I hide everything else. If somebody tags me or something like that, I'll hide it from my timeline so that if somebody else looks at who I am, there's no second guessing if, like, you know, if is this person legit or not.
Yep, absolutely. And I do have to say that you having that verification is really powerful, because I'm willing to bet it makes people second look. You know, wait, who is this? Is this
yes.
a celebrity? You know, tell me more. And I think that's something that's very coveted in the online marketing space. Everybody wants the verification. It's definitely not something that just happens overnight. It's something you have to work towards. But I think that's so cool that you were able to achieve that and then use it as leverage in your business.
Yeah, and actually, I'll tell you guys how I did it. Like, it's very, very simple. Yeah, it's super simple. We've done it for like 3 other people, and they've all gotten verification. So you've been featured, right? You've been featured in Glamour, I think HuffPost and stuff like that.
Yes.
Do the articles have your name in the headline?
Some of them do, and some of them don't.
Okay. Well, if you get like a publication that is a well respected publication, and they put your name in the headline, when you apply for verification, it'll give you a spot where to place your URL. You know, your website URL.
Mm-hmm.
Most people will put their website URL, which is completely fine. But I've found that if you put one of your columns, you know, like if you're a columnist at Entrepreneur, if you put that link in the URL, you're more likely to get verified than if you just put your website. Because that goes back to that credibility. Like, there's no second guessing that you're somebody worth verifying.
Wow. I hope everybody who is listening to this is like taking notes furiously, because that is so powerful. So the second you get a feature, especially if it features your name in the headline, absolutely put that as your URL and apply for verification with Facebook.
Boom.
So cool. Okay, so you are just 19, which I know I keep bringing that up, but part of the reason I like to bring that up is because I absolutely love how the world of entrepreneurship kind of almost levels the playing field. It changes everything. All of a sudden, hustle is a huge indication of success. What have been some of the characteristics that you have had to either naturally have or kind of develop in order to continually grow and scale your business?
Yeah. So major discipline. Right now, you know, I've kind of gotten used to it, so it's a habit. But before, it'd be hard because my friends would, you know, invite me to go out. They would, you know, just like people would invite me to do stuff and kind of like not bother me, but they wanted my attention.
Yes.
So I've really had to sacrifice that family time, that friend time. So I haven't gone to birthdays. Sometimes I don't go to like holiday parties. And I'll just be working, but I love working. Like, it's my stress reliever in a way. So, yeah, it became a habit. And then also, is learning every day. Like, you can hustle really hard, but if you hustle in the wrong way, because I know a lot of people that work a lot harder than me, work more, you know, work more hours, do more stuff, but they don't have any leverage. So that work is small. So like, I can work like 1 to 3 hours and then I can hit like a 5K client or something like that. And yes. Then, you know, and I don't have to work as hard, or I don't have to work as much. So I completely, I'm all with the hustle, because I hustle, but you got to hustle in the right way.
Definitely. I think that that's so important. So it sounds like self-discipline, hustle, but then hustling smart. So making sure that you're learning better ways and more efficient ways to run your business every day.
Yeah, always be learning. I'm always like, I have content from like Dennis Yu and like all these influencers that are on my to-do list to read, because I know like if I get their information, you know, it can help me out a lot.
Absolutely. I absolutely love reading and learning as well, but I always have like an Audible book playing in the background, and I'm, you know, taking notes anytime I come across something I like, but it's always going. You know, if I'm on social media, which is kind of my life, I'm always on social. I'm hearing the Audible, you know, in the background, and I think it's such a great way to multitask and kind of get a couple things done at once.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I'm not really into Audible, but like, I'll read a book, you know, so it's kind of like the same thing.
Definitely. So what is one of the things that you are, besides hitting the $100,000 a month mark, what is one of your major goals for not just 2017, but I guess, you know, for the next decade?
It's weird, because most of my goals that I've wanted ever since I started, they've kind of already came true. And in a way, I don't know, once you're kind of doing the work and you know, you're in the space for long enough. Not long enough, right? I've only been doing this for 2 years. But
it's long enough.
it's kind of not that cool, which kind of sucks, because when I think about it, I'm like, man, you know, I've always wanted to be on Forbes. And now that I'm on Forbes, I'm like, yeah, that's cool. But like that's my only goal for now, like the 100K. And then probably become a contributor for Forbes. That'd be really cool. I'd be stoked.
That is so cool. I bet it will happen faster than you even imagine it will.
I sure hope so. that's tough.
It definitely is. Okay, so Ulysses, where can people find out a little bit more about what you're up to and the latest projects in your world?
So yeah, you can follow me on my personal profile, which is Ulysses Osuna, or you can go to my website, influencerpress.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us today.
No problem.
See, I told you that was going to be a fun episode. Ulysses is an absolute blast, but he's also incredibly talented at what he does. So if you are looking for more information about Ulysses, you can head on over to rachelpeterson.com/podcast. And I also want you to do me another favor and head on over to iTunes. Leave me a review. Tell me what you learned in this episode. And as always, I want you to take action, get social, and be prepared to make a massive impact. Let's do this.